First One Out presents The People vs. Extinction, a Survivor Season 38 cast preview, hosted by me, Josh Wigler, and brought to you in collaboration with The Hollywood Reporter and Rob Has a Podcast. Chapter 3, Out with the Old, In with Manu. Survivor, Season 38, Day 2. In this final chapter, you'll meet the final players on the board. The members of Manu, buffed in blue. First, let's spy on them in action, as these eight men and women work together on fire, shelter buildings, and other odds and ends.
This kid is exhausting. Where do you want to sharpen it? Where do you want to sharpen it?
Oh, right here in the same.
I mean, just so you know, I'm going to be shoving. You're good. You're totally good. I just don't want you to back up.
Yeah, I don't want you to let go. He's a madman. I was starting this one. You want a big one? You want this one?
In addition to Wentworth and David, the Manu tribe consists of seven people who come from all walks of life, some of them with personalities so big that you're left to wonder how they'll fit inside a shelter. Case in point, Wendy Diaz, literally nicknamed Big Wendy, a blue-haired swamp meat vendor who is truly one in a million. She's joined on Manu by Rick Devins, a longtime Survivor fan who's used to cameras due to his job as an anchorman. Lauren O'Connell, a budding orthodontist whose love for Survivor has a very fun origin story. Keith Sowell, the youngest cast member at 19 years old, currently in pre-med at Duke University. New York's very own Dan Da Silva, who prefers to be known as the War Dog. Yes, that's right, the War Dog, a heavily tattooed veteran who looks like he's fresh off the factory line at Tony Vlacco's cloning facility. Reem Daly, 46 years old, who lost her job as a sales rep shortly before flying out to Fiji, providing some serious motivation to win the $1 million. And Chris Underwood, a secret superfan who hopes to put forth enough of an Aussie vibe to disguise his inner Survivor nerd. With all that said, we close out our look at the People vs. Extinction by rolling out the blue carpet for Manu, presented in the order in which I met them. Chapter 3, Part 1, Big Wendy.
Nice to meet you, Wendy.
Nice to meet you.
How are you feeling?
Excited.
You're pumped to be here. Are you a big Survivor fan?
I am.
So tell me about that. Tell me about your history with the show.
So I actually had never watched Survivor, and then my boyfriend introduced me to it, but since I'm against everything he likes, I was like, no, I'm not going to watch this. But then when he had in the background, I would like peek, and I'd be like, let me see what you're watching over here. And then like I got obsessed, and then had him like replay every season.
So you became a fan first. When did you get to the place where it's like, I could do that. I'd like to give that a shot.
For the first episode, I was like, look at these chums starving and this and that. I breeze through it. But again, I feel like I'm all talk.
Well, you're not all talk because here you are.
No, like once I'm on the island, I'm like, I'm starving. Get me off. I need hot Cheetos.
You can see that for yourself? Like, you think that's a possibility?
Maybe. I know I won't quit, but like, I might be suffering. Like, I'll have like junk food withdrawal.
Oh, you'll definitely be suffering. I mean, I hope you're aware. There's 100% chance of suffering.
I'm a bit delusional, so like, let reality hit me.
So tell me a bit about yourself outside of Survivor. Who are you? What are you all about?
Well, I'm kind of like a bore. I would say, like, I'm not one to like party or drink. I don't do any of that. I like stay home and karaoke by myself.
Okay.
Like, that's my favorite pastime.
Solo karaoke.
Yes. And I can't sing, by the way.
You can't, so that's why you don't want anyone around.
No, I don't mind. Well, I'll start singing right now.
Yeah, please do. What's your go-to karaoke jam?
Oh, anything ABBA, anything Bee Gees. Oh, that's my life.
Give me your best one. Let's do it.
Of what?
Anything. What's your go-to song? Yes.
More than a woman to me.
Yes.
I need
so
like a
good.
Whole session with you.
Well, after all of this, once we're done with the season, yes. We'll get back together. We'll do some karaoke.
I actually brought some karaoke mics, so hit Ponderosa if I get voted.
Oh, my
That's
God.
All
right.
Saying.
I'll talk to the people. We'll connect. We'll make it work. So tell me a bit about your life, like growing up and where you come from and everything like that.
So I was, I live in a little city called Bell. I grew up there with my mom. And my
Where sister. Is that?
It's the most corrupt city in America. Now that's what it's known for. It's like a tiny little city and our mayor like spent all our money and people started crying.
Oh, man.
So it's like in LA.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like a tiny little town. And I live there with my mom and my two sisters. I grew up there. I currently live in Whittier. And it was a happy little life I had.
Yeah. So you just, you got out of the corrupt city.
I love the corrupt city. If I could go back to the corrupt city, I would.
Is that like playing Survivor in its own way?
What do you mean?
Like going through that? Yeah.
City? I mean, again, I wasn't fazed by it. I feel like I did grow up, like, being a survivor, I would say, because, like, everything, like, let's say building a shelter and stuff. Like, I used to work at the Swami with my mom. My mom still works there, and I would help her build up shelters. And that lady is crazy, so we would go when it was raining and everything. So I was like, oh, that's no big deal for me. And then they eat rice and beans. I'm Mexican. I already eat that. Like, everything. I live survivor.
Wait, you worked at the what did you say?
I used to work at the Swami with my mom.
What is that?
It's like a flea market, kind of. Like, okay. You put up your booth, and you sell your wares. And yeah.
What were your wares? What would you sell?
Well, she used to sell clothing, which wasn't good when it mixed with the rain. So she switched out to electronics, which is worse for the
rain. Oh, that's why I've got the tent.
Yeah. And then, but this is flimsy. Ooh, let me build you a better one right now.
Right.
Use like the poles. And so now she sells like kind of like dollar stuff.
Okay.
Doesn't go so well.
But oh, really?
There she is.
And what do you do?
I I have like a small business. Yeah. I make like custom clothing, like pop culture parody clothing with like little sayings on it, and I sell them at Comic Cons. I do raves. I do anything.
Oh, nice. What's your favorite shirt that you make?
Well, they're kind of dirty. Let me get you like a cleaner one. I have like a pair of shorts that says like.
We could always censor this. Like,
oh,
we could put in like the little bleep or whatever.
Okay. Well, let me give you a clean one. A cleaner one is like a like shorts, and it has like "Let me Pikachu," and the little Pikachu has like little goggles. I have one that says like "One booty to rule them all." Like, everything's pop culture.
What's one of the dirtier ones? What's one of the ones that we might have to censor?
Here's
on the
like a subtle one that's like not dirty and right out, but it's. Just Call Me Winter, and it has the Stark logo on it.
Oh,
it's
nice.
Underwear with that.
Oh, that's great. So are you, like, big into pop culture and everything like that?
Yeah,
what's your favorite show? What's your thing?
What do you mean?
In terms of, like, you know, you talk about Game of Thrones, all of that.
I love Pokemon. I'm into anything, like, kind of geeky. I'm not, like, so geeky. I don't know. It's kind of weird. I'm, like, a...
You're in a friendly space for this, you know? I don't know if I project, like, a little bit of a geeky vibe.
No. Like, I can write out, say, I don't like Star Wars, and I'll get into a fight about it. Or, like, everyone's about Star Wars or Lord of the Rings. Like, they're about it, and I'm, like, just not about it. But since I'm, like, all into that, I'm, like, yeah, give me the references.
But you understand, like, fandoms, obviously.
Yeah, everything like that. Everything on the surface. Anything, like, I could delve into, like, some animes. I do, like Inuyasha, like Inuyasha. Like, things like that, you know.
Totally. You're about to become part of the Survivor fandom.
Yes.
Are you ready for that?
I am so excited. Like, I'm ready. Big Wendy, here I go.
Big Wendy, I love it.
Did you not read the necklace?
Is that what it says?
That's
Big
what,
Wendy. It says Big Wendy.
Yeah,
is that what you call yourself?
Yes.
Why Big Wendy?
Because I'm, like, 6'2". Well, it's because I can lie. There's no cameras here.
Someone's going to put it together. They're going to watch another thing. They're going to listen to this.
No one's going to put it together. They're like, there goes the giant Wendy.
But have you been Big Wendy for a while?
Yeah, I've been Big Wendy.
Is that like a life philosophy?
Yeah. So it's basically that. Like, I'm big. I guess big in personality, you would say.
Yeah.
And it's funny because, like, everyone's like, their first thing is like, you're Little Wendy, not Big Wendy. And I'm like, no, I fight to it to the death.
You're Big Wendy.
I'm Big Wendy. And I have Jeff call me that, too.
What have you thought of Jeff in your interactions
He's
with Jeff?
He's so friendly. He's, like, the friendliest man. And sometimes he looks mean on camera. I'm like, I'm going to upset him.
But you found him to be pretty nice.
He's the nicest man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, you've been watching Survivor. Who are, like, some of your favorite players? And who are some of the people maybe you'd want to try and play like?
Um, I, okay, I've been saying this, and I'll say it till the day I die. I love Michaela. She's such a badass. Like, she's just like, you can see her trying, and then she knows she needs a little more, so she musters it out of nowhere and she pulls through. Like, it sucks that she never makes it far, but it's because she's such a, like, strong player. They see her as a
threat. She made it pretty far the second time. Yeah, just not quite far enough.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. But you want to play that way. Like, you want to play,
no,
like, big. Oh, how do you want to play?
Don't calm down, because, like, again,
I'm
she
very excited
she
right
didn't
now.
Didn't make it to the end, so, like, I love her. I idolize her, but, like, people play too strong in the beginning, and they might not realize that they're playing too strong, but, like, that's what it is, and then you look like a threat. So I'm really gonna try to be like really the dumb blue haired girl in the beginning and be like, what are you talking about? I didn't even know how I made it on this island.
Right.
And then try to, like, you know, breeze through up until the merge, and then you play hard.
Okay, so you wanna go slow at the start. And then kick into overdrive at the merge.
And then I don't like people who just go slow the whole time. Like, speed it up a little. Like, you have to go hard. Go big or go home.
Right. What's the thing about Survivor that you're the most excited about now that you're out here?
Oh, everything. I honestly don't. I can't pick something that I'm not excited about. Like, I want to do it all.
You want to starve? Like, you're excited
to
sleep in the sand?
I want to starve. I want the grains all over me. Everything. Bring it. Like, oh, it's so boring at home. Give me some adventure. So then I could be like, okay, I did it. Maybe not again, but I did it once.
Right. So you wouldn't want to necessarily do this twice?
No, yeah, I would.
Already, you know.
Yeah, I would. I'd do it again.
So you said your boyfriend got you into Survivor.
Yeah,
so what does he think about all of this?
He is so mad that he didn't get chosen. He is fuming. And he's like, if you don't pick me as your loved one, ooh. And it was funny because we applied together.
Oh, really?
Our audition tape was both of us. And like when the casting director called us, Penny, my baby girl, can I give her a shout out?
Yeah, of course.
So she called me back and she was like, oh my God, you guys were wonderful, but you did a lot of talking. Can you do a video yourself? And she was like, oh no. So then I was like, aha, I was all rubbing it in his face. And he was just like, ooh, you better pick me as your loved one.
What did
he's
you?
He's fanatic about it. He's been watching it since a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And like, he's like, weird. Like, who, what kind of families sit at the TV and watch it? His kind of family.
A lot of families do.
Yeah, what kind of, is that real life?
A lot of families are going to be sitting on Wednesday nights watching you on Survivor. That is a thing that's about, it's real life. It's reality TV life.
Oh my God.
What did you do in the video, in the audition video?
The first audition tape I did, I was sitting in front of the, like, they say not to do this, but I sat in front of my computer and was like, hey guys, this is me. And then, like, that's when, like, Penny called me back. She was like, all right, do another one by yourself.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right. So the second one, I did it a little more exuberant.
What did you do?
I did, I showed off my swimming. I showed off, like, my puzzle skills. I can do a Rubik's Cube in under 3 minutes.
Oh, nice.
I just, everything about me. Again, I'm not, like, I'm kind of boring, but I guess I portray
I do not get
way.
A sense of boredom from you at all.
I'm just a little hyper.
Yeah. So you can do a Rubik's Cube in 3 minutes.
Yeah, under 3 minutes.
Under 3 minutes. Yes. So you're good at puzzles.
Yes. But again, I feel like I'm such big talk and I'm a choke on the show. And they're like, this girl is not good at puzzles.
I mean, sometimes it goes that way. And then other times, like you say in this moment in time, like,
yeah,
I'm great at puzzles. And then you go out there and you just kill all the puzzles.
My God. I really feel like I'm going to go out there and drown. Like, after showing off my swimming skills, I'm going to drown on Survivor.
You don't like your odds as a swimmer?
No, I'm a very good
player. Yeah, but now you're going to drown.
Yeah, I'm going to drown and then suck at the puzzles. And then, like, and then my shelter's going to fall on me. I just know it. Like, that's my luck.
Chapter 3, Part 2, Breaking News.
How's it going?
What's up, man?
We're having a good time over here.
Good.
Yes.
Finally, audience. Let's... It doesn't show me this body of mine.
I can relate. How are you, Josh?
Josh, Rick.
Nice to meet you, Rick. How are you?
I'm great.
Yeah?
Living the dream.
Yeah, man. So, you're a big Survivor guy?
I am a big Survivor guy.
Okay, tell me about that.
I am a big fan. Seen every episode ever. Not one of those guys that can recite every winner ever.
Right.
I just take it as it comes and enjoy
when you're
it.
Done with this, you're going to be thinking about that. Like, you're going to go back, you'll do, like, the deep dive into the Survivor Wiki. Like, you'll know, like, your place is, like, alongside all these other winners, so you'll want to know who you're in the circle with.
You think so? You don't think I'll just run from it for a while?
It's definitely highly likely that you will run away from Survivor for a while.
Don't say Survivor to me. I guess it depends on if I win or I go out first.
Right,
the
right,
difference
right.
There.
Yeah. But you're a fan of the show. What is it about the show that has spoken to you?
It's the personalities. It's the ultimate people watching, and it's so easy to relate it to your life. That's maybe not always a good thing for your coworkers, but yeah, man, it's a big bonding thing with my family. Like, we're always on the phone the day after Survivor. Like, can you believe that Angie swapped seats with Wendell? Like, what the hell is she thinking? Come on.
That was amazing, by the way.
Dude. I don't think Angie knew she was playing. I love Angie. I love
I spoke to her right around these parts a year ago, and she seemed fantastic, but yes.
Right, exactly. I need to be real careful what I say ahead of time, because I might be Angie.
Oh, you have no idea. Yeah, who knows? Oh, this is all time capsules.
Hopefully
stuff,
I'll take make it as long as she did. You know? Here I am criticizing.
Right. So tell me who you are outside of Survivor.
I'm Rick Devins. I'm 34. I'm a news anchor in Macon, Georgia, a morning news anchor.
Cool.
So I've got a wife, two kids, two cats, two dogs.
Nice.
Yeah, man.
I like the cats. I'm a cat man myself.
You're a cat man? Yeah. Calvin and Melvin.
Calvin and Melvin.
Keeping it real. Yeah.
Ooh, I like.
Yeah, we got Cat Hobbs as the dog, so Calvin and Hobbs.
I
and
love
then,
it. Yeah. That's great. How'd you get into newscasting?
The long way. I wanted to be a film director. Yeah, film director, I said, right?
Yeah.
My dad was like, okay, that's fine, but also get journalism while you're in school. Went up to stay with my friend in New York for like 2 weeks and was like, I can't live in New York. So I got a job making commercials and making like local commercials, like tire shop commercials, because it's like you're directing your own movie. Not as fulfilling as I thought. So I started weaseling my way into like the high school football show, weekend sports guy, reporter, and then now morning news anchor.
Do you like it?
I do like it.
How long
I like
have you been
it
doing it for?
The morning news anchor job for about 4 or 5 years now.
Okay.
Yeah, since we started a morning show.
Yeah.
At WGXA Morning News.
Yeah. How would you, like, start your show? Like, give us, like, a little bit of a tease of what it's like to sit down in front of your show.
We have the headlines. It's horrible.
Well,
give
like what today's headlines are here on Survivor Day.
Okay. Hollywood Reporter, live in Fiji, plus photographs. You have to take them with your shirt off. And Donald Trump, what's he doing to the world? I'm Rick Devins. Thanks for joining us on WGXA Morning News on Fox 24.
Yeah. Lord help us that it is going to be real time capsule stuff on that last one.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting to me when you come out to Survivor, like you're volunteering to, you know, unplug yourself from your life, unplug yourself from your family, your friends, all of that. The news cycle. And in your case, that's your job. And it is exhausting for so many people just to be, like, you know, in the world that we're living in right now. Is this a treat for you? Or is this terrible for you?
This is a huge treat for me. It's great time. I wish I knew what was happening in the NBA Finals and the Stanley Cup Finals. But aside from that, it's awesome not having my phone to check Twitter. Because you can't stop yourself if it's there.
Yeah.
Even if you don't want to. It's just, I'm reading a book, man. I'm reading a book.
How long has it been since you've read a book?
Oh,
a minute.
Too long. It's been a minute, yeah.
What book do you have? Oh, Stephen
Sleeping
King.
Sleeping Beauty. Stephen King and Owen King. Some nepotism, but it's good.
Sure. I haven't read much Owen King, but Joe Hill's a great writer.
Joe Hill's awesome, and he went the whole Joe Hill route.
Yeah.
Owen King's going a different route.
He's like, I need the name.
But hey, man, I'd do the same thing.
Yeah, me too. Are you kidding
me? I might
be
Rick King out here just to see if it works. Like, Steven, do you watch Survivor up there in Bangor?
I wonder. I feel like he'd get a kick out of it. There's a lot of horror that happens out
here. He could definitely write a book about, like, Survivor and Derry.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
I bet Pennywise would be great.
Oh, Pennywise would be a terrifying opponent, for sure.
How many idols has he got?
So this is a treat for you. So you're unplugged from the news cycle, and you're going to be forthright with people about what you do.
I am,
talk me through that. Was it ever a question for you?
It wasn't for me until I got to casting, and everyone's like, you're going to tell them what you're going to do.
I think there's just, like, you know, whenever anyone has, like, kind of, like, a cool job or like a job that you haven't even necessarily seen on Survivor before. I think you're probably the first Survivor newscaster, or at least somebody who entered Survivor as a newscaster.
Yeah. Thank you to my news director.
Yes. It's probably something like that. Like, it's like this special shiny thing. So they're at least like asking you about it.
Well, I think, you know, I was like, I even asked them, I was like, why would I not tell them? And they're like, they might think you're smart. And I was like, I'll take care of that. Pretty quickly, we'll dispel that. They might think you make a lot of money. I'm in Macon, Georgia. This isn't Matt Lauer.
Right.
No one's driving down a helicopter. It's not Matt Lauer in a lot of ways.
Yes.
In a lot of ways.
Fair to say.
But no, I think I've got so many secrets I'm going to have to keep out here with the game that I don't want to have to worry about not letting some stuff slip about, like, what would I say I do?
Right.
Again, not smart enough to be pretend to be an engineer or anything like that.
You filmed tire commercials?
Yeah, I could have done that. Yeah, I make local commercials.
Right.
But yeah, I'm just going to be straight up about it. And they'll get to know me soon enough and be like, okay.
Do you think that there's anything about that line of work that's conducive to Survivor in terms of being able to react quickly to stories as things are breaking?
Yeah, more even so. Definitely there's a sense of that, being able to react in real time. But I interview people all the time.
Yeah.
Might relate to that.
Sure.
And a bunch of different people and different types of people. So you're going to talk to a politician differently than you're going to talk to a guy who's just gone through a tragedy on the streets, you know?
Right.
And you have to approach them on their home turf and make them feel comfortable. And people love being asked questions. I'm enjoying it right now.
I'm sure.
So I think that's definitely going to play into my hands out there because I'm taking my dad body, and I'm going to try to hook up with some of these physical guys, and you know, I want to be the brain, I don't want them to know I'm running things, but I want to kind of run things, let them pave the way, and focus on each other.
Totally.
So we'll see how that goes.
Speaking of dad body, are you worried about challenges? Like, have you been training? Like, how do you feel about all that?
I feel good about challenges. I think low expectations are my best friend, man.
Yeah.
All through life.
Yeah.
Nothing's better than low expectations. It's like, you can get past that. So I'm a real competitive person. I play a lot of pickup basketball. I've been definitely working out a lot of cardio for this.
Cool.
So I think hopefully the bar will be so low that they'll be like, boy, he's hanging in there.
I love it.
And I just have to be good enough to not drag down the team. Once I get to the merge, they want me to be weak, so it's
right.
Fine line there.
Yeah. What do the people back at home think about all of this? Think about you coming back out of here.
They are super psyched about it. The people who know about it are super psyched. My wife's incredibly supportive. She's the real survivor at home with the two kids, two dogs, two cats. So if I come home with anything less than $1 million, I'm going to get some crap from her.
Yeah.
But they're excited. And like I said, my family's huge Survivor fans, so they can't believe, like, they're going to get a behind-the-scenes look at what's going on. And I'm not going to tell them how I did at all. And
yeah.
So they're going to be probably in more pain watching than I am going to be.
Like, no
out
one
here.
You won't tell your wife.
I'll tell my wife.
Yeah,
probably
she deserves
how
to know.
I did. Exactly. There's no not telling her. I'd be a dead man.
Yeah.
And if I go off first, I'll probably don't, like, just
don't watch.
They'll see me. They'll be like, you didn't lose any weight. No, just shut up. I'm still growing the beard. I don't care.
No, if you go home early, then you go on, like, a massive power diet.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, convince everybody that you got to day 39. And then at least, like, the victory that you can take from all of this is that you really got one over on everyone in your world.
See, I think that's a good idea. Just go to Ponderosa and hunger strike. Get a few bad sunburns. And just, yeah. No showers.
Yeah,
Ponderosa will hate me, but
how's the beard going to come out for you?
It's going to be good, man.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to grow a beard since I've been able to grow a beard.
Right.
Because I'm a news anchor and they don't let you, and they won't let me do No Shave November. But so I'm excited. It grows in full. And every vacation I have, I let it grow as much as it can. So I only know what 2 weeks looks like. I'm excited to see what the full shebang looks
That's gonna
like.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, man.
That's going to be
and
cool.
And like I said, you can vote me out, but you can't shave my beard. I'm seeing how this thing plays out.
So you're a Survivor fan.
Yeah.
Here you are in Survivor, 38th season of Survivor. Yeah. We're deep into the run. The game is fast. The game is furious. Shit's
so
gone crazy.
Now.
How are you feeling about your odds in, like, the current game? And have you thought at all about anything wild or weird that you want to bring into it?
You think about all the desperate things that you can do. You know, when you know you're on the chopping block, you can do a lot of desperate things. I mean, you can walk up to somebody and then just run away from them real quick as soon as someone comes. And it's like, that's really sketchy looking, but you just set them up. But you have to, it's like, you have to know you're on the chopping block to make that work.
Right.
So, I plan on leaving it all out on the field, but there's just so much to it now that I'm trying not to get too far ahead of myself, because you just kind of take it as it comes, and then, you know, these people, I feel like I've got a sense of their personalities, but who knows what they're going to be like out there. So I'm ready to play big, but I just want to kind of take it as it comes. I'm trying not to get too far ahead of myself.
That's a fun one that you mentioned. Like, you run up to somebody who's, like, probably, like, somebody who you want to target, right? If you know you're on the chopping block, and you just like kind of like linger and wait around until somebody sees you, and then you dart away, and it's like, what were you guys talking about?
Exactly.
And the guy's like, nothing. He was just hovering awkwardly, and then you go to that person later and be like, no, we were talking about everything.
No, you even trip as you're trying to run away. So it's so obvious that you were trying not to be seen. Because if you're the other person, like, who are you believing? The guy who's like, no, he ran up and tripped.
Yeah.
Or the guy who's like, yeah, because you're like, yeah, no, I wasn't talking to him. But then later it's like, oh, shit, yeah, man, you know.
I hope you're not on the chopping block ever, but if you are, I hope you remember this one.
I know.
Because I want to see it on TV.
I know. I want to have the balls to do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're used to being on TV. Is this aspect of it, is this comfortable for you? Like, are you ready to have, like, cameras in your face at all times and everything like that?
You know, they don't follow me to the bathroom, that's for sure.
Sure. They don't out here either,
yes,
by the way.
Which was nice to hear.
Yes.
Which was nice to hear.
Yes.
During the awkward dump. So we get privacy.
You're okay.
As long,
yes,
as we're alone.
That's when you should really take some time to gather yourself and think. Just like take a really, you know, long aqua dump and
just,
recalibrate.
Just like at home. I need some time with the iPad, honey.
Yes, yes.
I'll be back to you and the kids in 40 to 50 minutes.
Right. Yeah. In this case, 40 to 50 days.
Yeah, right. It's going to be an experience. I don't think it's going to bug me too much. You assume that you're going to stop seeing them after a while, but It's definitely an experience. I'm probably, you'd have to say I'm probably a little more prepared for it just because of what I do, but I don't think much. It's such a different species.
Yeah. What's the thing you're most excited about being out here?
I'm going to win $1 million, man. I mean, I'm not that cocky, but I feel like I have a really good shot at it.
How come?
I look at the folks around me and I just feel like, again, This is based on not talking to them at all. But I feel like I can get through, that I'm going to be physical enough to do the physical stuff, and then I'm going to be weaselly enough. Like, I'm going to really like these people. There's no doubt. Like, I'll really consider them friends, but I'm absolutely going to stab them in the back.
No question about that.
Oh, no question. Like, if I went home and hadn't stabbed anyone in the back, it's like, what was I even doing there? That's like playing football and be like, no, I didn't tackle anybody. I didn't want to hurt anybody. It's like, no, that's the game, man.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'll do it with a smile, you know? That's what I always liked. I always liked the players that could be jerks, but, like, you still liked them. They still smile.
You want to be the likable jerk out here.
Or just likable, but yeah. But I'll go for likable jerk. Dislikable jerk is what I'm avoiding.
At all costs.
But if I'm a dislikable jerk with $1 million, I can deal.
You can live with that.
Yeah.
Chapter 3, Part 3, Pulling Teeth.
Hi, Lauren.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing quite well. I imagine I'm not doing quite as well as you. I think that you're probably doing, like, a little bit better than me.
Just a little bit. It's super close.
This must be ridiculous.
It's unreal. I mean, it's absolutely unreal. I mean, I kid you not, 7 days ago, I was walking the stage at my graduation.
Whoa.
Yes, I graduated from Baylor University 7 days ago, and here I am on Survivor.
Hell of a way to launch into,
right,
like, true adulthood.
I know, it's just, like, been an amazing, amazing week, honestly.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, like, the run-up to it has been something,
yes,
as well,
amazing.
So talk to me a little bit about that, like, how did this all start to come together? Like, you're probably, is it like your final semester that this is all starting to come together? Is it even before all of that?
Yeah, so I was a Division I collegiate athlete, and so...
What was your sport?
I played soccer.
Cool.
Yeah, so I played soccer my whole life and watched Survivor my whole life, right? So I wanted to apply, but of course I was, you know, too young. And then when I was 18, I was playing soccer at Baylor, and I don't have summers. I don't have any time. I was spending 40 hours a week playing my sport, and there was no possible way that I could apply. And so also my coach, I don't think would have loved it, but,
not a fan of the show, or not a fan of, like...
Love the show, wants me to be eating food.
Yes, exactly.
Wants me to be eating food.
Not emaciated, with your muscles atrophied.
Right. Not a huge fan. So, as soon as I graduated, so my last season of soccer was actually last fall, as soon as I graduated from soccer, I kind of was thinking about it. I was like, I'd love to apply. I'd really love to apply. And one thing led to another, and I didn't actually apply until the first week of March.
Okay.
And so I didn't apply until late. I was, you know, applying to grad schools those first few months, and it just all happened so fast. I mean, in the course of 2 months, you know, I was getting told that I'm going to Georgetown for grad school, graduating from Baylor, and I'm going to be on freaking Survivor.
Yikes.
You know, like, it was just it has been the most amazing, like, 3 months of my life.
How have you, like, kept all of it straight? Like, you want to make sure that, like, you're present for every experience.
Right,
so you're
right.
graduating college, I'm sure leaving a lot of friends behind and everything, mm-hmm. while also, like, you're on the most important business trip of your life right now.
I know. I think for me, a lot of the time is just making sure that I'm in the moment that I'm in. Because I don't think that I'm ever going to be on a beach on Survivor ever again. You know, I'm never going to be walking the stage at graduation at Baylor University ever again. And I think being able to just really be present in those moments and be thankful for that experience. And then once that experience is over, okay, thankful for the next experience. And being able to really differentiate that time has been important.
So you're going to Georgetown after all of this. What for?
Yes, for my master's in physiology.
Okay.
And then I'll apply to dental school after that.
Cool. Okay, so you want to be a dentist?
I want to be an orthodontist.
Okay, cool.
Yes, but you have to go to dental school first before you can go to...
I didn't like my orthodontist.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, he was fine... But, like, I think I just associate bad memories of, like, getting, like, braces on
and
everything.
No, I get that. A lot of people do. Like, a lot of people do. I had a really great run with my braces.
Yeah.
Like, it was super
easy. I loved my dentist. I didn't love
the
orthodontist.
See, people are, like, there's a lot of controversy. Either you love your dentist, hate your orthodontist, or the other way around.
Right.
I just like the idea of being able to see the beginning and the end product. I think that's super special. So.
Yeah. What got you into being interested in that line of work?
Yeah, so my second-ish year at Baylor, I started volunteering with the Mission Waco Free Medical Clinic. And I was just kind of there, you know, doing papers, doing triage for patients, nothing, like, crazy important. And then they started bringing in a dentist for dental night. And it was just absolutely insane the amount of people that needed this free dental care. And it really hadn't hit me before, you know, like, I've been very blessed to be able to go see a dentist every 6 months and complain about it every time, you know? And it's like, it just really hit my heart. And so I started volunteering just at that dental office. And then I was like, you know what, maybe I can look into orthodontia. And so I went to go intern with an orthodontist, and I absolutely just loved it. I loved just the process. I loved being able to see a patient from the beginning to end. And then a lot of times when you love your orthodontist, which it sounds like you didn't, but I
love
did.
My dentist, though.
Yes.
Again, let me just reiterate, Dr. Bobby, mwah, you're the best.
But it's like, it becomes a family thing. So, you know, like, my orthodontist became my brother's orthodontist, who he retired before my little sister could go see him. But it's like, it becomes a family thing. And I think that that's super, super special.
Yeah. So you're going to be fixing teeth after Survivor. And here you're going to be crushing teeth. You're going to be, like,
hopefully.
Punching people in the mouth.
Yes, exactly that.
Tell me about you and Survivor and this being something that's been in your life. And now it's about to be in your life in a real serious
way. I know. So when I was, I don't even know, how old am I? 21. And this show's been on for almost 20 years.
Almost. Yeah, very close.
I know. So, okay. So I was probably, let's say three years old. And I used to carry around these two Barbies, like Ken and Barbie, right? And I named them Colby and Tina. And, like, I, like, no joke. And so my dad tells me, like, I would sit in our little, like, you know, living room, and I would recreate Final Tribal Council. And, like, Colby was my Prince Charming,
oh,
right?
Mine as well.
Right?
Everybody's,
I know,
right?
Everybody.
You know?
And so he would always win. He would always win. You were robbed, Colby. You were robbed.
She would pick him up,
yes,
right?
Yes, of course, of course. And so, you know, that, like, kind of, my dad tells the story. He says that he walked in, and he's like, what are you doing? I said, I'm practicing for my Final Tribal Council, you know? And so Survivor just became this really amazing time for my whole family to get together and watch it. You know, my brother is younger than me. My sister is younger than me, each by, you know, 5 years progressively. And so it was really nice to have a family show that all of us could watch together. You know, I'd go off to college and we'd record it. And when I got home for Christmas, we'd all binge watch it together, you know? And so as I got to watching the show and, like, I became more mature watching it. It wasn't just, you know, Ken and Barbie. I vividly remember watching Poverty Play the first time in season 13, or I think it was 13, Cook Islands, something like that.
Yeah.
And I can still remember her, like, kind of walking through the rocks, and it says Poverty, Boxer. And I remember thinking, I'm cute, like, I'm athletic, I don't have a real job either. Like, I can go play Survivor, you know? And it was funny, because I don't know how old I must have been, maybe 14, and as I grew and I watched her grow through her three seasons or however many, it was like she was so much more than what you originally thought. You know, like, I think a lot of people boxed her into this, like, flirt category, whereas, like, she was freaking a badass.
Yeah.
You know, like, she was a power player. She was smart. She was athletic. I think she's one of the greatest players to ever play. And
sure.
I think that a lot about Survivor I learned is, like, being more than what maybe you thought you were, and maybe more than what, like, society thought you were. And I think that that's what really, like, draws me to it, is that idea that you are more than whatever it is that you think you might be boxed into.
So what do you think you might be boxed into? What are you more than?
Right, I think that for me, it depends on where you're meeting me, right? So if you're meeting me on the soccer field, I'm this, like, really, really competitive athlete that will slit your throat. You know, yeah. Like, I'm, like, mean.
I feel like that's got to be illegal in soccer.
Right. Yeah. No, it totally is. But just, like, I'm really aggressive and I'm really determined. And then you meet me outside of soccer, and I might be this, like, super bubbly, sweet, like, maybe a little flirty, like, girl, you know? You meet me at school, and I'm really smart, and, like, I'm maybe a little bit OCD about my grades. And so I think that it depends on where you meet me, but you might put me in one of those boxes. And I think that my, like, goal is to maybe integrate all three of those boxes, be more than just one at a time, and be able to use all three of them to
my advantage. Want people, when they meet you in Survivor, you want a little bit from all of those worlds.
Right. Yeah. Yes. I think being able to have someone say, you know, oh, she's cute. Okay, maybe, you know, oh, she's athletic. Maybe she's smart. I want them to be like, no, that girl's like a badass. She is athletic. She is smart. She is fun. She is kind. Like, all these different adjectives that I think add to the person that you are more than just, you know, a singular one.
So in terms of, you know, Parvati kind of being, like, other than Colby, like, sort of your Survivor spirit animal,
right?
Like, somebody who, like, really showed you that this could be something that you'd be interested in playing someday. Are there things about her game specifically, or just her play style, that you really want to emulate out here?
Yeah, I think that a lot about her was that she was incredible at making relationships. I think you saw it a lot when she played in Micronesia and Fans Are Favorites. She was friends with, not friends, but she made relationships with people that maybe you thought weren't important. And I think that in life, that's an incredible attribute.
Totally.
But being able to make friends with people that maybe don't suit you at the moment. So I think I saw it with, like, Alexis and Natalie. She didn't need them. She did not need Alexis and Natalie. But then it ended up working out for her in the long run. She led one of the most notorious women's alliances ever, you know? And so I think that for her, you know, aside from the fact that I think that she's an incredible force in challenges, I think that she's incredibly smart. I think that her social game is something that I loved. Her ability to make relationships with people that maybe weren't at the top of everyone else's list.
Right. So you think that idea of, like, there's probably, I mean, for anybody in life, like, there's the people you gravitate towards.
Exactly.
And people who, like, you're a natural fit with, and then people like, ah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, like, you're looking at, like, those, like, kind of, like, rougher spots, and you want to bring those in.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I think, you know, in addition to Parvati, I think that Kelly Wentworth is someone that I just, like, adore.
Yeah.
Just because she's, like, so content in being a badass. Like, she will just go out there and rock you.
Yeah,
you
that
know?
Was a great game she played.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's just, like, I love that about her. And she didn't win, you know, but she just went out there and, like, you remember her. And I think it's funny sometimes, like, maybe the people that win aren't the people that you always remember. And I think that that's, like, something that has been kind of sticking with me. You know, when people ask, like, yeah, Parvati won, but Kelly Wentworth didn't win. And I sometimes you think about it and you're like, did that person even win? I don't remember, but I remember them.
Yeah.
And I think that that's something that's really special about Survivor as well.
Yeah, I don't think that you need to win $1 million to become a legend in
exactly,
this
game. Exactly.
Is it more important for you to, like, make your mark on Survivor than it is to win?
That's so funny. Okay, like, multiple people have asked me, would you rather be memorable or would you rather win? I think that my goal is to be both.
Ideally,
you know,
yeah.
Ideally. But I think if I had to choose, I think that being memorable is something that I would choose. Because, you know, a lot of people, I think of Aris, and I thought he was, like, the sweetest darn thing. But no one remembers he won.
Yeah.
You know, no one remembers he won. And it's like, okay, well, do I want to be Parvati or do I want to be Aris? And I think my choice is Parvati.
Chapter 3, Part 4. 19.
Hello there.
Hello.
Welcome, welcome.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good.
I'm Josh.
Nice to meet you. I'm Keith.
Nice to meet you, Keith.
Nice
this is your spot.
You.
Anywhere you want to put your bag, feel free. Make yourself at home.
Gotcha.
My tent is your tent.
Cool.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Still in excitement. A lot of joy.
Yeah?
It's all still hitting me. Just because, you know, this is my dream, and, like, I've seen this so much on TV and on YouTube and everything, but now I'm here. Like, I'm literally looking at it.
How does it compare? I mean, HD is one thing, but, like, in person, that's got to, like, immersive.
It doesn't compare. It doesn't. Like, even just to feel the sand under your feet, Like, it's crazy. Like, I was literally thinking about every step I was taking just because it's so surreal. It's crazy.
So, big Survivor fan, I assume.
Huge, super fan.
Tell me about that.
Like, I've watched... Okay, my first season, which is kind of awkward, was Second Chances. Because,
okay.
Like, you know, it's awkward because, like, everybody's already played and these are returning players. But it was also a good season, though, too. So I guess that was also good.
I also have this theory that, like, because, like, Ghost Island just aired and, like, there was a lot of questions about, like, oh, if I haven't watched a lot of Survivor, should I watch Ghost Island? And there's, like, a strong case for no, because there are, you know, all of these, you know, spoilers that are going to come up. Yeah. Like, you know that James screwed up in Survivor China and everything
Eric
like that.
Thing, yep.
But at the same time, it like, kind of intrigues you to go back.
To go back and watch. That's what happened with me.
I imagine.
Like, watching Second Chances, like, these were good players. And I was like, dang, if they're this good now, let me go back and see their first seasons. Which is what happened.
Yeah.
So it's, like, inspiring. It also, like, kind of spoils a bit, but... It has its pros and its cons.
Sure, but, like, then there's all, like, the myriad of stuff that when you go back to those seasons, you don't know what happened. So, like, maybe you know this one thing, you know, this one person didn't make it, but you don't know how the rest of it played
exactly.
out.
Yeah. Exactly. Which was the case for me with a lot of, like, previous seasons. So I even watched, like, Game Changers before watching Heroes versus Villains, but it was, the experience was, for me, just as good because I love the show that much.
So what was it about the show once you started watching it that really spoke to you? What was it about Survivor that you're like, yeah, this is my thing?
So I'm like a competitive person. Like, even just watching people compete against each other is something that like, I really enjoy. And the thing with Survivor that I couldn't get anywhere else is that there were just so many things going on. So many, like, moving pieces. Like, with the immunity challenges and the immunity idols and, like, the different alliances that was going against each other and, like, blind sides. It was just a lot to take in. But I enjoyed it just because it was so much. So many different elements. And then, like, they're starving. Like, you can't factor all this stuff in. And I'll be sitting there watching, like, I can do that. I can do that challenge. It looks amazing. But I didn't factor into, like, you know, they're starving while doing this. It's just so much.
Yeah. It's why people, like, get so mad. And it's literally, like, my job to, like, when you do something stupid on the show, I have to yell at you about it, you know? But, like, I have no idea what's going on with you.
Exactly.
You're malnourished. You're not
paranoia, panic attacks. Look, I'm probably going to have so many panic attacks.
Oh, really? Is that something you're worried about?
No, honestly not. Because I'm going, like, even, like, in my worst moments, I'm still going to enjoy it and, like, relish in it just because that's how much I love this game. And... Even my worst moments, I'm still going to look at from, like, probably, like, a positive point of view. Even though, like, I'm starving and I'm probably going to be, like, kneeling over. If I can still think back to how much I love this game, that's going to get me through.
Yeah. So are you a pretty positive person just overall?
Yeah, definitely. Pretty positive. I get my negative moments. Like, I have a couple friends, like, we can like, look at every negative portion. We can be pessimistic as possible.
Yeah.
But, like, overall, I'm always pretty positive and, like, looking at the end goals.
Cool. So, tell me about yourself outside of Survivor. Who are you? Like, what brought you to this moment in your life?
So, I'm 19. Something that some people won't guess is I'm a youth pastor, and I'm also a junior at Duke University. What brought me here? I was already telling people before I even applied, ever even thinking about applying for the show. Like, I'm gonna do that. I told people I'm gonna be on that show. Obviously, they probably didn't think of much of it because they're just like, oh, you don't camp. You don't sleep outside, you don't fish, you don't do none of that, so why would you go on? You're not going to make it. But, I applied when I was 18, didn't work out, it was overdone, everybody was like, oh, that's a good video. But when I hit 19, I just woke up one morning, I said, let's just do this. Talk in front of the camera, and here I am.
So what did you do in that first video?
In the first video, I tried to show, like, every part of myself. Like, I had a clip of me in a Duke kitchen, I had me doing, like, tennis, because I also do tennis. And it was just a bunch of clips pieced together. But then it hit me, like, they really just want something authentic and, like, you on the spot. Because that's what's going to happen if you were in the game. It's just going to be put on the spot. How are you going to react? And, like, just your personality shine through rather than, like, a bunch of clips pieced together.
Yeah. So what'd you do to shine your personality through? What'd you say on audition tape number two?
I really, because, like, I just woke up over Christmas break one day. I was feeling good. I was like, you know what? Let's just do this again. Went in my living room, put the camera on my cell phone, just talk for, like, literally 3 minutes. Just talk. It was just me in a chair, and little do I know, it worked out.
There you go. So you're a youth pastor.
Youth pastor.
What's involved in that? How'd you get involved with that?
So, me and my family always, like, believed in God and everything, but we weren't, like, really serious about it early on when I was, like, living my childhood. But then my sister took me to church one day, and I genuinely enjoyed it. And I started basing everything off of church. And really started to delve into my faith and everything. And I became more involved. Like, I was doing things in the sound room and everything. And it really hit me that, like, not all people my age are, like, have this feeling that I have. And so that was I started to take on that role of like being a youth pastor to like try to like bring up the youth, people my age and like younger, so that they can have an experience like mine and like really go to God for like the things that I go to him about, which is everything, and have the same experience as me.
Yeah. And so what are you doing at Duke? You're a junior.
Mm-hmm. So I am pre-med.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is a lot. The goal is to go to medical school to be a surgeon.
Nice.
I always had I always knew I wanted to help people. So from like early on, I knew I wanted to be a doctor. I just wasn't sure what type or anything. And I was always making good grades. And people were like, oh, he's smart. He's going to go to Duke. Just because, like, you know, it's in North Carolina. It's right in our background. And
that's where you're from.
That's where I'm from. Okay, cool. Fayetteville, North Carolina. And just hearing people say that over and over, I feel like I just got attached to it and was like, oh, Duke. That's the goal. Applied. And once I found out I got in, I knew I was going to go.
Nice.
And so, yep, taking pre-med courses there.
And so in terms of that being the field that you're pursuing, why was that the case? Why do you want to be a surgeon of everything that you could do?
I'm really interested like in the human body. Like the human body is just something that interests me, just seeing how everything's worked together. And I always knew I wanted to be in the operating room too, just like from looking at videos and like taking a couple visits. I was like, this is where I want to be. And this is where I would never lose my passion for. Yeah, I think it was just because of the human body, but it also makes money. And like me and my family, we come from like a very underprivileged home. We don't have a lot of the stuff that other people have. I need to be able to do something that makes money to bring us up out of that.
Yeah.
Like I may have like some other like interests and stuff, but if it's not going to make me money, then can't do it.
Winning $1 million on a summer break seems like a good start,
yes,
right?
Yes, it does. That's going to change a lot. When I win $1 million, it's going to change a lot.
So this is, you know, the money is a huge motivator. And I think it is for most people, obviously. Mm-hmm. But there are people who are like, I'm here for the adventure. I'm here to experience Survivor and all that. You're here for the prize.
I've just seen some people say that, you know, they want to challenge themselves and all this stuff. I don't come out here, spend nights outside, put myself through starvation for fun. Like, that's not a challenge I want to have. I can challenge myself any other way. I can go play another sport. That's not what I'm going to do for fun. This is strictly for the end game. I love the game, but I'm looking towards the end. I'm here for the million.
But it also feels realistic to you in the sense that, like, you watched the show and you felt like, I can do that. So in terms of, like strategy and, like, playing the game, what is it that you are thinking about, what you're planning to do, what your philosophy is heading into Survivor this season?
So, there's been a couple young people before me, like 18, 19-year-olds, Will and Michael.
Yeah.
love both of them, but I feel like they approached the game the wrong way. Like, they were afraid of their age, and Will didn't want to be seen as this young kid. Michael just straight up lied about his age. That's not what I'm going to do. I'm going to definitely let people know that, hey, I'm 19, probably going to be the youngest one out there, and I'm willing to take that role. Like, I can be the little brother, you know, that little best friend of people that they need me to be. Let them think that I'm in their back pocket. And, like, that's going to already bring me forth, if I play it right, already to the merge. And that's when I can really start shining out. So the 19, using that age to, like, kind of downplay myself in their eyes will, like, keep me around. Because they won't be thinking, like, if a blind stop happens, they won't be thinking, oh, he wasn't the engineer behind that. But in reality, I will be.
Yeah, so you're hoping that it's going to, like, disarm people a little bit, that they're going to underestimate you.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I also know how to kind of navigate conversations and stuff. Because, like, being a resident assistant over, like, freshman at Duke, it pushed me out of my comfort zone and, like, really helped me socially. And how to navigate conversations to make people feel like they're priorities. And that's what I'm going to bring out here into making my alliances and making everybody feel included, so that they'll be willing to stay in the alliances. So I'm bringing that out there to also disarm their guards.
Yeah. So being 19, you don't view it as any kind of disadvantage at all. Like, you feel like, you know, I think one of the things that, like, optically, like, looking at, like, when a teenager is playing Survivor, it's like, compared to, like, a 30-year-old or something like that, you just haven't lived as much life, just, like, in terms of, like, actual years on the planet, but you feel like you've lived a lot of life.
Mm-hmm. I have. Just because, going back again, like, we didn't have a lot of stuff, and we always had to make ends meet at home. And then, like, going through school, like, high school and, like, applying to college, I didn't have people over my shoulder telling me, oh, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to have extracurriculars. I was really all that was new territory for me. So I had to make things happen on my own. And God really blessed me to put the effort and put the work in to get that stuff done. And that's what I'm bringing out here, because I don't know how to do a lot of this stuff, but I'm going to make it work.
Yeah. What is your faith going to do for you out here?
I'm going to be basing every decision off of God, because I know this is going to be a lot, and I'm going to go through, but it's going to help me remember that this is not going to last forever. Like, the starvation and whatever I do go through, that it is 39 days, just counting down the days, and remember that's not going to last forever, and remember what's back home and what you're trying to do, like, what's the purpose. Yeah. If I can keep remembering what the purpose is and base everything off faith, I'm going to get through it.
And what is back home? What does your family think of all of this? Like, was it hard for them to, like, let you out here?
It was hard, just because, like, family is something that's really close to me, and now not really having that out here, this is new. Like, it was hard just having those last phone calls, which I usually, like, whenever I watch the show, I was just like, oh, they're leaving their families for, like, 39 days. That mean much. But it was, like, really hard just leaving them, especially my mom. Like, she's always worried about me, and, like, we always keep in touch, but now it's different. So they're kind of scared, but they're also excited to see what's going to happen.
And you're okay being away?
Just because I love the game so much, like, it's not gonna, like, I'm not, of course I'm gonna miss home, but I'm not willing to quit the game just to go back home. Like, I'm excited to be out here.
Yeah, and in fairness, I don't think it's an option.
Look, exactly. So look, they don't give you the option. Look, exactly.
Like, you can quit, but you're going back to Ponderosa.
You ain't going back home. Look. So yeah, but no, I'm excited. And, like, it just having, being so close to home and being close to my family, like, that's a reason to be out here.
Chapter 3, Part 5, The War Dog.
How's it going?
What's going on?
How are you?
Good.
I'm Josh.
Hey, Josh, what's going on, man? I'm the War Dog. How are you?
The War Dog?
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Is that, like, the given name, or that's the, you took that on?
No, I mean, well, it's tattooed on my arm, too.
Oh, nice.
It's been,
How do I get one of those? Not the tattoo. I need to, you know, I can convert some of this stuff, right?
Why not? You look like a young buck.
I got time. I'll figure it out at another later date.
All right.
Yeah, tell me about the War Dog.
Well, the War Dog started off as, our platoon nickname for when I was in basic training about 20 years ago, and it kind of morphed into my own nickname. And then my first car I got in 1999, I had a War Dog license plate, and somewhere along the line, it went from being a nickname to kind of like a way of life.
Yeah.
And, mostly I think when I got to Afghanistan, my second combat tour, it was 2012, and, I had been going through, I just kind of like, somebody just broke up with me before I left, and you go into this new area, you're kind of by yourself, and I was with, some newer soldiers I didn't know as well, and I think it was kind of became like a defense mechanism on top of like a persona. And since then, I've had commanding officers since then. A couple have called me War Dog, joking around. Actually, one had a meeting several times, like, "Hey, War Dog, come here." My call signs I deploy were always War Dog 6, and then it kind of became who I am, and I've been told, I was told for a while that, hey, by several different command officers that. De Silva, hey, you march by the beat of your own drum, you know. And now I'm not really sure if there is a difference between War Dog and Dan, which is my Christian name,
yes.
Right? I just feel like it's just a multifaceted of who I am.
Yeah,
and I know when I need to switch on more what people would want or expect from Dan, because I'm in law school right now, right?
Okay.
So I finished up my second year of law school.
Nice, congratulations.
Thank you. So I know when I go on interviews and this, that, and the other, what they're kind of looking for. But the true me is somewhere a gray area way in between.
You're in the center of the Venn diagram.
I'm in the center, yeah, definitely. And but out here, the War Dog's coming more to light. It's free. It's actually easier to be the War Dog than it is to be Dan.
Out here in Fiji.
I think overall in life, it's easier to be the person who just kind of follows his own rules. Does what he wants to do, and it's always like upbeat, positive, make people smile and laugh. It's easier being that guy, and even though the name might sound menacing, it's only really menacing in a sense of confidence, organization, and way of life.
Yeah.
Right? So, and honestly, I think that I'm coming into this game with a little bit of bad timing, right? So, you look at me and you see the bald head. I'm from New York, right?
Yeah.
And you see the bald head, and one of the first things you might think of, oh, Tony.
Yeah.
And then you might start thinking, oh, Joe Mina, too.
Yeah.
And then the New York thing, you just finish saying, oh, look, Dominic went all the way to the end. And then you start saying, oh, he's a military. Ben won the game. Right? So, like, you got all these combinations.
Target, target, target.
So, my tribe mates will still think I live in New York, which will only be a hard sell because I've been wearing my Nets and Mets gear all pregame. I have a Nets and Mets tattoos.
Oh, nice.
So that's the easy part. And because I don't need another target. For some reason, I don't know why, but lawyers and cops get, like, the worst branding in this game, right? You could be a neurosurgeon. People are like, oh, he's a nice guy. Like, wait, that guy's a genius.
Yeah.
But if you're, like, a lawyer or a cop, you're, like, the slippery, gotta get rid of you kind of person. So they're going to see the war dog from the get-go. And they're going to get a little bit thrown off. Because I think I've already been pegged pregame. Already people are looking at me. And I've already seen that. This is season's Tony and Dominic and Joe or whatever. Right. Mixed with, oh, he's military. Mixed with little Ben because maybe, you know, Angela wasn't the same kind of... Maybe back to the alpha male they love to cast. Right?
And you're going to be forthright about your military experience?
I got a tattoo on the arm, too.
You can't hide it.
I call
it
war dogs. Yeah. But what they're going to get is more of somebody that's a little bit more gestured up. You know, somebody that's a little bit more easygoing.
Yeah.
Somebody a little bit more fun. And maybe somebody they think might not be as intelligent as I am.
Okay.
Maybe somebody they think that, you know, early on they might need me for challenge, but after a while they're like, oh, Wardog, he's a character, but he's one of my votes.
Right. You know? That's what you want to project.
That's what I want to project.
So what does that require? Because, like, if you're right and that's the perception of you, then that type of player's probably got a lot of eyes on that person. So does that mean, like, you can't be running around looking for idols right
Correct.
Away?
Correct. I said to myself, 8 days, and that's only like the third elimination. And even then, it might be more to right before the merge, you know, before merge or the merge itself. Like running around looking for idols, I feel like, first of all, I shouldn't have to do it right away. Because even though the game has been, it's constantly evolving now, right? With all these swaps coming so early, the old adage of keep tribe strength, that shit's out the window, right? It's more about what works for my game. You know, there's various, and looking around and I'm picking up what I think is probably some very smart players here in this season. And this is my first impression, right? And what I want to do is position myself where I'm not that guy. I'm not Dominic who finds an idol on day two. I'm not Joe who finds an idol on day two or three. I'm not Tony who starts looking at an idol for the first 2 seconds on the beach. I'm not those three guys. And, you know, even then, like, even if I was those guys, like, you... Tony's game was amazing to watch on TV. Kagiano is one of my favorite seasons.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
It's great, right?
Yeah.
But that game does not work very often.
No, they call him the Survivor Unicorn for a reason.
That game doesn't work. And actually, it only works because he's put on this tribe with Cliff Robinson and Wu, and they win all these challenges. He doesn't have to go to Tribal Council
right.
until after a swap, until new dynamics have been put into play. So it's like, I don't even know if they went unlucky and started losing the first couple of challenges, I don't even know if he's even in the game past... The second elimination,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So while that's really interesting to watch, it's not as easy to replicate. What I think is a game that's much better to replicate, or at least a blueprint, would be something like Jeremy 2.0.
Yeah.
And even then, like, you have to adjust and move. I think the difference between his first, and I really admire his game a lot, especially when it comes to the newer age games. I mean, you could go all the way back to the game like Yul Kwan, which was great for then.
Yeah.
But that game doesn't translate now. It's a different game. But I thought Jeremy, his first time, he played too aggro. And he knew how to subtly turn it down and subtly get the heat off him. You didn't see Jeremy running around for idle. He did find one, but he didn't start
right.
get his idle to a little bit more deeper into the game. Because then by then, people start getting tired. They're sleeping in. They're lazy, right? You start running for an idol like Jacobs does, you know, God bless his soul, and on the first day, people are like, where's this guy at?
Right.
So
you got to conserve your energy a little.
I got to conserve my energy a little bit.
Because it's not only just like, it's both for reputation management, but you're also saying it's for, like, literally the energy level, maybe like mid-game, it drops. And if you've eased on the gas for a while, that's when you can go.
Of course. And hopefully, I could take advantage of some physical strength and not be those first, you know, two tribals. If I'm unfortunate where my tribe is going to tribal council, then I'm not the target anyway.
Yeah.
And I also don't even want to paint who the target is. So those first 8 days or so, the first three tribals possibly, I don't want to be out there looking for idols. And I want, if anything, play a Sandra Diaz type game of anybody but me.
Yeah.
I mean, let this let person A piss off and annoy person B at camp, and let this one do this, and let that person C say that I'm the best at puzzles and blow a puzzle up. Just not me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you could, I've heard people that make it to the final tribal council and say to that person, you're a goat. What did you do? Like, oh, I orchestrated that move to take out the second player of the game. Nobody cares. First of all, like, half the people weren't even there around, weren't even on your tribe, don't even know, right?
Yeah.
And, like, and the only people that I could vouch for you might have already been out in the pre-merge, or one person that probably just not even speaking up because they're quiet in that jury. Like, nobody cares.
Yeah.
But they'll remember the moves post-merge.
Yeah, you guys watched the Ghost Island finale.
We did it 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Two days ago.
And so one of the things that was interesting about that was, so Wendell wins, and the people who vote for him are all, like, the second half of the jury. That kind of speaks to what you're talking about. It's like, yeah, you can be a rock star in the early going of the game. You can even be a rock star at, like, the top of the merge. But it's really that final push.
Yeah. And it's funny because, and then I think somebody, one of the producers just having a kind of conversation, and they said, who would you have voted for? And I said it was, to me, it was really neck and neck up until the finale. And at the finale, I would have probably voted Dominic for the same reason he lost. It was to show every juror is different. I would have said, man, what a bluff he did at Final Six.
Yeah.
He doesn't get through unless he makes a theatrical showing to put out Sebastian and Donathan and this, that, and the other, and hand the idol to Jeff. He doesn't. Otherwise, the votes, you know, Sebastian doesn't even, I don't even know why, he doesn't even use his second vote.
Right.
Like, don't get me started there, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't even use the second vote. But at the same time, and even afterwards, when they're in the tribal council, like, Sebastian had a puzzled look on his face, and Donathan was upset that, Sebastian was fooled for not even going the original plan. And Sebastian was upset that he was made like a fool. And it was like, and then those two were just bitter. And those are two that swung the vote.
Right.
So, but then at the same time, I thought that was the one play that was separate the two of them. So I kind of look at it and you learn from everything. Say, well, maybe you got to do the same play, but maybe he was a little bit too much abrasive about it.
Yeah. I think it depends on who you're playing.
Who you're playing to, yeah.
You know, like, everyone is so subjective. This is all great. I want to know a little more about,
oh, yeah,
about you,
yeah,
too.
Yeah,
like, this
yeah,
is all fantastic, though. So you were in the military. Now you're in law school. Can you chart that journey for me a little bit? Like,
yes.
Did you always know you were going to go to the military? Was that something that came up for you?
Yeah, so I joined the Army Reserves, actually, when I was 17. Mostly because in high school, I had some discipline issues, did not do good grades at all. And I thought that, hey, join the Army would be the way to go. And I joined the Reserves initially because my parents wouldn't let me go active duty. When you were 17, you needed permission, right? So I joined the Reserves, and that worked for about a year or so until all of a sudden, I think I hit my worst years, about 19 to 22, when I was getting, you know, in trouble with the law and doing some just dumb, drunken, nothing too serious, but
yeah,
enough time to get arrested several times and just dumb stuff, right? And and then I decided this is not my path. And while I was doing that, I was working in a telecommunications company, and I was like a rising star where I was like 21 years old, you know, making over $60,000 a year in 2001.
Yeah.
Having 13 people work for me, 12 were younger than me. I mean, older than me, right? I was only like, all these people, like, I had three departments, but I was unhappy because I was like working like 60 hours a week, getting shit-faced drunk, and then going out and doing dumb stuff, right? And I decided, I want to do this Army thing full time, but I want to be an officer. I was used to making money. So I went to ROTC, and I had about 2 years left of school. So I went down to Miami. I'd never been to Miami before, but I'm always an adventure seeker. So
sure.
Go down to Miami.
You're here in Fiji.
I'm here in Fiji right now. Unbelievable, huh?
Yeah.
So I go down to Miami. I do that. As soon as I get down there, I join a fraternity. So I get this full, like, it was supposed to have been 2 years. It took 2.5 years. Army wasn't happy about that because I was enjoying Miami a little bit too much. And come to find out, I didn't get selected effective duty, so now I'm a reserve now officer. So I started doing advertising sales for about a year until I kept, like, volunteering for missions. And I volunteered for a mission that was stateside, and then finally got into a unit that was going to Iraq in 2008. So did Iraq for a year, came back, worked a year in Texas and at Fort Bliss, training soldiers going, reservists going to Iraq and Afghanistan. Then I decided, they wanted to keep me out for another 2 years in the Army, and all of a sudden my shift changed, and I said, no, I'm more of like I want to like prove in a competition, and I had always this like social, like on the side, like loved playing poker, but I was like, no, I'm going to go out there and do it for real. So I moved to Vegas.
Wow.
2010. So I played poker for a full-time 2 years. For a little bit, I also worked at a nightclub, a brand new nightclub that opened up at the time. And then I joined a unit that was going to Afghanistan in 2012. And that Afghanistan mission was the one that really probably changed all the different directions. That probably was like the most, it was much more real than what my experience in Iraq. And once again, everybody's experience depends on what your job was, what you were doing at the time. Right?
Yeah.
And so that was really like, to me, it was a really eye-opening experience as far as especially like self-growth. And I got back from that, did another year in Vegas playing poker. Then I wasn't really sure what to do, so I ended up volunteering to go to a year to Kuwait between the summer of 14 and 15. So I kind of did that mission for like money and for, I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do in my life.
Right.
It's like one of those like, let me just go there, right? And I was kind of trying to find myself. And I got back and I got back from Kuwait in the summer of 15, and my sister had been an attorney for 15 years. It's like, you should really, you know, take the LSAT. Because I was thinking about, oh, I got this GI Bill now after doing 3 tours that pays school fully. And I already have a bachelor's degree. And I did a bachelor's in history because I just loved it and I needed something for my Army degree. So I said, what am I going to do? And then I started studying for the LSAT and I loved it. I was like, this isn't it. This is what I've been looking for. This analytical, this logical, this reasoning, this competition. And I started applying to schools in New York and L.A. Got into every one but one that I applied to and decided that I'm going to go join the school with the best, most beautiful view in the entire country is Pepperdine.
Yeah.
That overlooks the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know the campus, yeah.
So I just finished my second year there now.
Nice.
And
do you miss New York at all?
You know, yes and no, because I moved out of my parents' house when I was 19 and I left New York when I was 23. And I did a one-year cameo when I was 26 working advertising sales in New York. But besides that, I go there every holidays. Sometimes the second time for some type of wedding engagement, but I normally go for like 9-10 days on the holidays. And that's enough for me.
Yeah.
And then I'm still tied to my Mets and my Nets in the Syracuse as well. And
oh, nice. I'm an alum.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I have a couple friends who are alum, yeah. Right? And so I love my Orange. But now with all these satellite packages, I watch my three teams, the Nets, Mets, and the Orange. And
that's enough New York for you.
That's enough New York for me,
that's
right?
That's enough New York for you.
And especially the Mets, because it's like, that's where all my friends, like, there's not many Nets fans out there. And there are, I have some players that are Syracuse.
Yeah, and you left New York before they became the Brooklyn Nets,
they're
right?
New Jersey Nets, right. Yeah. And I was still a fan of them because I was always the anti-guy, right?
Got it.
So, like, I didn't want to be the Knicks.
You like the underdog. I like that. The underwar dog.
So I became a Mets fan. But I have so many Mets fans that are my age. It was a weird time. Grew up as a kid in the 80s. The Yankees weren't good.
Yeah.
And a lot of my friends were either had no father or first generation here. So they became Mets fans because that was a cool thing to do. Nobody taught us better, right? Because we've had an easy life these last 30 years, right? I love my team. So I have so much New York there. And a lot of the people I keep close to, they moved on too. Guys live in Chicago and Houston and Florida. So we just keep in touch all the time.
Nice.
And that's...
So you got a lot of people who are going to be very proud of you when you win $1 million at the end of this.
Some people are going to be so surprised to see me, and they're going to be tuning in, for sure. Like, what are you doing over there? So, and I'm gonna go to my max and do what I have to do to win. Like, just the pragmatic side of me says that the difference between finishing second place and first place is astronomical. So it doesn't matter that you make this big gamble and knocks you out 12th or 13th or 8th. I'm not trying to move up a spot or two.
You're trying to win.
I'm trying to win.
Chapter 3, Part 6, Dreams.
How's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. Life is great. We're here in sunny Fiji.
Cool spot.
It's not bad, huh? It's literally cool.
Yeah, it is.
This will be I guess I haven't seen everybody else's setup, but I imagine that this will be among the cooler setups.
Dude, you are hydrated. Nice job.
I am trying. I'm doing my best. It gets toasty out here.
Right?
And I schwitz, so I'm trying to...
You're not alone.
I'm sure. So the one thing I'll warn you about before we start is mm-hmm. the table's sensitive for the audio.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could just, like, not touch it as much as we can,
mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
will probably violate that rule.
I'll try not to eat,
yes,
too.
Yes,
a bad idea.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi. How I'm Raim Daly.
I'm Josh.
Hi, Josh.
Very
thank you.
Nice to meet you.
Great to meet you.
How are you feeling?
I'm excited.
This is wild.
Very, very excited. I mean, I can't even believe it. It hasn't really, I mean, even though I'm in the middle of who knows where. I still
somewhere
feel like
in
I'm in a dream. Yeah. I feel like I'm in a dream.
This feels dreamlike to you.
Yeah, it just hasn't hit me. I mean, I don't know. It's bizarre. I had a dream last night, actually, that I was playing a weird game of Survivor with, like, some friends. And I was going to get voted out, and I was pissed because I was like, dude, what are you doing? And it was all because they thought this guy was hot. And I'm like, that's not going to work. So I was like, and then I woke up, and I'm like, oh, thank God. That was so weird. Yeah, so.
So you're dreaming about Survivor while you're living the dream.
I'm waiting to wake up, honestly. I can't believe it. I truly can't believe it.
So are you a lifelong Survivor fan?
Oh, yeah. From season one, like. Even though we've been, you know, we left on the 22nd to start this adventure, it just doesn't feel real yet.
Yeah, I think it's, when Prope says go,
yeah,
I think it's going to feel very real.
I mean, is that what everybody says who you interview?
It's what I've observed. This is my sixth time doing one of these.
Yeah.
And just from what I've observed, there's been a lot of like, holy, where am I?
But you know what's funny? Like, even after this whole thing is said and done, I feel like it was all a dream. It's just, you know when something's too good to be true? That's what I feel like.
One of the ways that I have heard it described, it was actually with Dom from last season,
mm-hmm.
was that it feels like you're in an alternate universe.
That's perfect, yeah.
That, like, you're in, like, this reality, like, yeah, it's real, but you're, like, in, like, this bubble. You're, like, in game world.
Yeah.
This isn't the real world.
No, I'm just waiting for it to go home. Like, at any moment,
just get, like, rubber banded back.
It's amazing, and I'm honored to be here, and I'm so proud of myself to have been chosen. It's the greatest thing ever, like, you know, never stop wanting something, I guess, or trying.
Yeah.
And that was a one-shot try. Like, I'm super impressed with myself. I'm not going to lie to you. Like,
what did you do? How did you get on the radar? What was the application like?
I mean, I was in the car driving home from a girls' weekend with one of my best friends, and I was like, you know what? Let's do it. It was, like, Mother's Day, and I'm like, that's it. Hit record. Let's go. And I just blah, 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 rattled off a bunch of stuff, and, like, it went from this emotion, that was crazy. I don't even know where it all came from, and then she submitted the video, but to the wrong place, and I got...
Where did she send it?
Well, because, you know, those casting agencies, and she goes, oh, I think I sent it to the wrong place, and I go, well, go ahead and hit submit, but we need to send it to Survivor, so she had a hard time doing it from her phone, so then it, like, you know, it took my buddy who's super smart with doing everything, he came over and he uploaded the video, and I couldn't believe it. Next thing you know, I get a call, and like,
how fast?
Let's say it was September or October, which I thought was fast because
yeah.
that was the end of May, June, July, like three and a half, 4 months. I couldn't believe it. I thought they were joking. I'm like, shut up. But first I got a phone call from the casting agency, actually. But they wanted money, and my husband's like, why are you paying them? And I'm like, you know what? If they want me, they'll call me. And they called me, so I'm super happy, and yeah, it's the greatest thing ever.
So if we were to wake up from the dream right now, and we would suddenly be home, where would we be? Tell me about home. Tell me about life outside of Survivor.
Life outside of Survivor is Survivor. No, home is Ashburn, Virginia, and I would go home to three amazing children and a wonderful husband who are crazy supportive, and they would have hoped that I kept my game face on the whole time, wasn't emotional, remembered that no matter what, they were proud of me, although I better not get voted off early.
Is that what they said?
Oh, yeah. They're
they gave
hardcore.
You the spiel?
Oh, they're hardcore.
Oh, so the whole family, you're all in.
Oh, yeah. Survivor. Oh, yeah. They made it very clear we could travel 300 hours to come see you, and if you can get a clue instead, we will go home. Do not see us. We will see you when you get home.
Oh, like the Wendell thing.
Super. Yeah, totally. There's, like, yeah, when we watch it every week. No talking. If you talk, you're kicked out of the room. Like,
you're
sorry. Like,
out.
We're very, very mean about it. We're like, get out. Sorry. If you can't stop talking, you're out. Very hardcore. We're very serious about it. And, I mean, it's a great family show. You know what I mean? and we love discussing it, and I love it when my son does commentary on all the challenges. He's hilarious. And yeah, no, it's perfect. That's the only one that's allowed to talk during challenges when he does commentary.
He has a gift.
He does have a gift. It's really super funny. Yeah, I love it when he does that. But yeah, no, home is awesome. Unfortunately, I'll go home to no job because they're I'll be laid off.
What happened?
Whatever. I'm not going to name names, but my company is lame and doesn't care about customer service and satisfaction and laid off a majority of their sales force. So I'm getting laid off. So if anyone's hiring, I'll take your application.
Well, this comes out like close to when your season comes out.
I know.
So hopefully between then and, you know, now and then.
Yeah, I'll find a job by then. But it's just kind of lame.
So did that happen like shortly before you came out here?
Yeah, I knew it was a possibility. I thought they were going to keep some people, but yeah, I was basically straight up told this is what's happening. I mean, but I had applied for my leave of absence prior, and they were kind enough to grant it for me, so I could have gotten the boot before I left, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, what sucks is I had the best year of my life. It was one of my greatest years there, so I guess I went out with a bang. Yeah.
In terms of, like, the work that you accomplished?
Yes, my sales. It was a great year for me.
Yeah.
You did great. You're fired.
You know...
The tribe has spoken.
Yeah, unfortunately, that sounds like a lot of, like, you know, what's going to happen out here? Hopefully not to
people, right?
Like, you know...
Good. Yeah, great job.
Yeah, you're gone.
You're too strong. Get out.
Well, I think that the fix to the job situation is obviously you just got $1 million.
Right. Yeah, 100% going to win the money, but that won't come until later. And it is $500,000 because you have to be honest with taxes.
Sure.
But no, I'll find another job. I'm not worried about it. But you know what? It kind of worked out perfectly, and my family's so supportive, and I truly appreciate that because you can't just take 6 weeks out of your life. You know what I mean? So it's not like...
Not without a lot of thought and conversation.
Yeah, and it's like I couldn't really apply for a job prior to leaving because if they... I mean... People could be contacting me now, and I'm not replying. They think I don't care. You know what I mean? So it kind of puts you in a weird position, but you got to live, man. And that's what I'm doing.
All right. Well, you're going to live out on the beach.
Yes.
You're going to be playing Survivor with all these crazy people.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? How are you going to play Survivor? Tell me a little bit about, like, your thoughts on the game. You know, not even necessarily, like, if you've got, like, a whole game plan laid out, although, of course, I would love to hear it. But just in terms of, like, how you view Survivor.
So... Here's the thing, like, people come out here and they're like, they have this whole plan of what they're going to do. Are they not the ones that get voted off first because
they've got
all this stuff in their head and they're super fans and next thing you know, they're out because they're just, you can't come out here and just strategize every 2 seconds. That's annoying. You can't start the game like that, I feel like. I feel like just be helpful around camp, be polite. Respectful, make friends, not enemies, and win challenges, and stop trying to be something. Just be yourself. I think that's what screws people a lot. They're tryharding, as my son would say. They're being a tryhard.
Right.
Don't do that. Like, just be chill and get through it, and just try to win. And definitely make alliances, but don't be, like, crazy about making the alliances and, like, being annoying about it and being paranoid. And always befriend everybody. Everybody. And I think that's what people forget to do sometimes. They focus so much on, oh, I'm going to make an alliance with them, and then they're just friends with them, and they don't forget about these three people.
Those three people become...
really awesome folks to hang out with, and... What you didn't do was make friends with those people and get to know them. So I think in the beginning, I just, you know, want to be considerate, polite, friendly, more of a listener than a blot. Nobody wants to hear you run your mouth all day long or touch. Nobody wants to be touched every 5 seconds either.
Yeah, not out here for sure.
It's so annoying. Like, you always see people, oh, can we cuddle? No, don't touch me. We don't need to touch and we're all good. No touching. So I'm just going to be myself. You know, I'm not a good liar. I'm not a good schemer. I think it's first and foremost, you want to be around people that aren't annoying. Cause the ones that are gone are annoying.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Totally.
So I think that's, we're just going to have to feel it out. I don't want to go in with a plan because that's just dumb.
Chapter 3, Part 7, for Monica.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Oh, he knows the song. Oh, my goodness.
Dude.
Oh, my God. Bringing the theme music over here.
Oh, man.
Oh,
hey, listen, I want a wiggle hat.
You want a wombat hat?
I want a wombat hat.
All right, so I will very happily deputize you as the official wombat of this season's cast.
Yes. Thank you.
I know that this is the reason why you came out here. Like, the whole thing has been just to get that hat, and it would be my great privilege.
Can I be honest with you?
Yes.
I've been waiting for this all day. Spent 7 hours in a tent, not talking to anyone, not doing anything, just bullshitting my way to this very point in time.
Oh, my God, I'm honored.
Yeah.
I'm touched.
To tell you this.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
To tell you this. Dude, you cursed me.
What did I do?
Well, if you go back to Rob and you.
Yeah.
The Evolution of Strategy.
Yes.
Season 27.
Okay.
Blood versus Water.
Yes.
I'm doing it for Monica.
Yeah.
And now, every time I don't want to go up to the bathroom or do something, I'm like, for Monica. And I just, like, it somehow, like, trips my mind out to do whatever I didn't want to do.
So everything that you've been doing since hearing that chapter has been for Monica?
For Monica.
So you're out here to win.
I'm winning for Monica. I had to tell you that.
Well, I am both like horrified by that, but also deeply touched.
Yeah.
To know that I have invaded your brain
yeah.
at such a deep level.
Way to go, man. Oh gosh, ingrained in my soul. I can't get it out. It's just a catchphrase in my life now.
All right, so your mission now is you got to come up with the catchphrase that when we do the Evolution of Strategy 38.
Mm. Yeah.
We will be able to infect your catchphrase into some other player. Pass the curse along. That's how you reverse the curse.
That's how I'm going to do it.
So think of some like really good catchphrases that you can bust out this season. We'll go with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll think about it.
So outside of the fact that you are possessed by the devil of Monica Culpepper, who are you and what are you doing out here?
Oh, man. I'm Chris. Going through a quarter-life crisis out here.
Indeed.
25 years old and ready to kick some butt.
Okay. And you're a survivor guy, clearly. If you're listening to the audiobook, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I'm listening to the audiobook. I guess you could say I have some crazy thing that's just survivors. Yeah. It's in my head, man.
How long has that been?
Man, I grew up watching the show with my dad.
Yeah.
And that's probably how most, I think every person our age, 20s, 30s, just was like, grew up watching Survivor with their dad.
Yeah, at least like it was always like a thing in the background, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like what they always dreamed of doing, but never got the chance. And now I'm living vicariously, they're living vicariously through me.
Yeah.
All the dads. I watched it, and then as I got out of school, realized it was, you know, it was something I could do. Like, it became a reality where it's like, okay, boyhood dream. Wait, no, now, it's not a dream anymore. Like, you can do this. And so I started applying. It took a few years.
Yeah.
I think most people now, I mean, it's just so selective with their cast. They're just getting better and better. It's tough to make the show, but whatever they saw in me this year, the evolution of Chris over the last 3 years, it's got me here talking to you now.
What do you think it was?
Growing up, it really was. Like, when I first applied, I had just this crazy long hair, like, just curls flowing, was just working at a bar, I was the classic. South Carolina.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I was just working at a bar, it was like a barista in a cafe, you know, making latte art for, like, snobs, and I was just, you know, didn't know what to do, And now, a few years later, I'm a district manager for a sales organization. Had a lot of success in a short amount of time. And, just brought everything I learned over the last 3 years and put it into who I am today, what I want to do with this game, what I want to do with life. And it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I'm still on a journey, man, but it's, you know, it's got me this far. So I'm excited to be here.
So what do you want to do with this game? What do you want to do with life? Tell me. You're here. You've been thinking about this, and the moment is real. It's happening.
Yeah. So even since I've been here, it's been a process, because I came into this game telling myself that I want to play the perfect game. And that's what I thought I wanted to do, play the perfect game, pull little pieces from different Survivor winners and different players who just kicked ass and put them all into this, you know, perfect game. So people be like, dude, that guy played one hell of a game. From, you know, the charm of Malcolm and the humor of Tyson and the, you know, adaptability of a Cochran and, you know, the strategic play of Rob, right? All these things. But then I got here and I kind of had like a breakdown emotionally, and it was a really interesting experience, because I'd forgotten that like part of playing this game is just, you know, enjoying the process.
Yeah.
And for me, this kind of like, you know, metaphysical type of way, like, it's coming from when I watched this show with my dad and was a boy, and now becoming a man and outside of this game, but now actually playing it and having the need for this, you know, making history, like, right? Being a legend, and that's just been mulling over my thoughts lately. It's been kind of transformative. I've always thought that this game, it's hard to explain it. It changed people, but I thought part of it was just like, oh, you know, I had a lot of, you know, doubt in myself, but now I can go out and do it.
Right,
you know, like,
totally.
I can do anything I want. And I was like, oh, that's just a load of baloney. Like, just, you know, go work a hard job for a gritty job. And
right.
Like,
Cesternino's of the mind that, like, Survivor doesn't really change anybody. Like, yeah, that's his opinion.
Yeah.
But you're feeling already something's happening.
Yeah, yeah, it's like coming out here is, I'm in a weird, twisted, diabolical way, trying to find a little peace. Like, if I can find peace in this chaotic game, in this storm, man, I think I'm going to go back and just be a better person, be a better partner to my girl back home, just be a better future dad. Like, all these things, it's weird, it's crazy, didn't think it would happen to me, but yeah, man. Been like emotional, excited. There's so many things I'm trying to figure out,
and that's really since like your feet have touched the beach, basically.
Yes. Like, I got, well, the pride, you know, the pride in me is like, when I thought my feet were gonna touch the beach, like, I was gonna come out firing, and I just got like, someone took a 2x4 and smacked me on the back of the head right when I landed. I was, hit the sand, you know, face first, and was like, oh crap. Let's reassess this whole thing. Let's figure out what's actually going to be, you know, of meaning.
Yeah.
To this season of life for all these people out here. And how am I going to fit into that? You know?
You already get that sense, though, of, like, you know, you love the game, you respect the game. So I think that, like, you know, when people are like, oh, do they feed them sandwiches in between shots? Like, you already know that's bullshit.
Yeah.
But there's, like, a sense of, you know, being here and seeing it, like, Survivor's real.
Yeah.
And you're really in it.
Yeah. And it was funny yesterday, because we rewatched Heroes Villains season 20, and that scene when Rob just passes out and he's like,
it's getting the best of me. Yeah.
I love and respect the game so much. Oh.
Right.
And I was like, thinking
you
about,
were
like
weeping a single tear inside him.
I was like, I feel you, Rob.
Yeah.
I feel you. It was like
the only person that Boston Rob has ever made cry. Just kidding. He's probably made a lot of people cry.
Yeah.
He seems like a mean guy.
Yeah, he's a jerk.
No, he seems great.
He's awesome.
Wow. That's the power of Boston Rob. Our entire opinion has changed so swiftly.
Yeah, it's just very polarizing.
Yeah.
I hate the guy, but I love him.
But you have this feeling of emotion right now, but you also know that you got to play the game. You know,
you're
here for business as well as pleasure. You know, it is both, and hopefully skewed towards the business side, I assume.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Have you been thinking about stuff that you want to bring into this game?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Naturally, I'm a pretty easy guy. Someone, I think my friends like me. Go to a bar.
If they don't, you are fucked up.
Dude, I am screwed. I am screwed. You know, like, just easygoing, easy to get along with. This, like, this mantra I've been telling myself is just be a seven. Just be a seven. Like, make impressions. Don't make too many impressions. Don't be a dick, you know, but don't be some hotshot. Just be a regular dude. Before, you know, a few years back, I was a dive instructor, taught people how to scuba dive, was out on charter fishing boats. Like, the water's my element. I love spearfishing. I love sailing.
So Fiji seems like a place for you.
Fiji's awesome. Like, I'm so excited we're here right now. But unbeknownst to my cast, and I'm not going to, there's part of my gameplay is I'm also a door-to-door sales manager who's become, is very successful in his given field. And had, you know, has been a part of the number one, like, our respectively the number one office in Little Greenville, South Carolina, the entire country in door-to-door sales. And I'm a part of that. And there's, absolutely, there's the art of persuasion and psychology and getting to a point where you've figured out what someone needs and you're making that fall in line with what you want. And that is... to me, if I thought that someone, as a fellow, you know, salesperson, I thought that someone else out here was like a badass at sales, dude, that'd be a big target. I wouldn't know if I would be able to align with that guy, and I don't want that target on my back.
So you're not talking about
it. I'm not talking about it. Yeah.
So what are you?
I'm a regular dude.
What's your job though?
I'm a sales instructor. I'm a dive instructor.
Got it.
Yeah, I teach people how to dive. I love being, you know, in the water, helping people feel calm, get out of their element. You know, love nature. I'm a nature boy. Majored in it in college. I was an environmental
studies. You were a nature boy major?
I was a nature boy major. Wow. Dude, it's this crazy, like, college of artsy-fartsy, and you're just one of the majors, nature boy.
Amazing.
Yeah. Wait, no. It's the University of Ric Flair. Nature
right.
boy.
Indeed.
Woo!
Indeed.
No, man, I just, like, I love this stuff, man. I've done a number of hikes, through hikes several weeks, and just excursions. It's part of me. Out here, I'm going to use that to make pretty good impressions in the first few days, because we know that's when you need a strong tribe. And unless people really are threatened by you or just annoyed as hell at you, you're good for a couple votes if you can be a valued part of society.
Yeah.
So
in terms of, like, the outdoorsy stuff, you're going to say you're a dive instructor, so you're going to live up to the hype when it comes to the water. You feel good about that.
Yeah, I feel good about that.
Final Four challenge with the fire and everything, you feel okay.
Yeah, I feel good about that. I practice making fire with Flynn. It's a lot different than with matches.
Sure.
You know, it's different, but I was able to make it successfully. And for me, good thing is I'm pretty early. I get up early. Back home, like, I'm an early riser. I'm up at like 5 in the morning.
Oh wow.
Like, early 5:30 in the morning. And that out here is actually pretty good, because if you're the first one up, you're the first one who gets to practice making fire. You're the first one getting that, you know, getting that started again for the day's work. And it's gonna be a little time to think through my game, but also practice, because I sure as hell don't want to end up at the Final Four and not be able to make it, man. That would suck. But it preparation, you know, don't be a Laurel. Don't be Laurel. I don't know how to make fire.
You know how to make fire.
Dude, I know how to make fire, yeah.
All right, man.
Get
him.
Well, man,
go
dude,
get
I
him,
can't
dude.
Wait.
Oh, my goodness.
Hey, for Monica.
Do it for Monica.
For Monica.
Into the microphone. Who are you going to win for?
I'm winning it for Monica.
Beautiful. We got it. Good stuff, man. Go crush it, okay? I'll see you on the other side.
Chris Underwood is out here for Monica. And in a way, so is everyone else. It's just that Monica means different things to different people. For some, Monica is money, the $1 million. For others, It means glory, the fulfillment of an epic quest. For others still, it's the culmination of years of dreams, or an escape from a present nightmare. For everybody, rookies and returnees alike, it's a descent into the unknown. Sure, the veteran Survivor players look like they have it all together, but in truth,
I don't know what to expect. You know, I'm trying to have no expectations.
I mean, I don't know what's going on here. Come into this puppy blindfolded, and I got a little suspicion there might be some new people here. And if I were a new person, and there were a few returnees showing up, I don't think I'd be very pleased.
As the survivors enter the edge of extinction, they have no idea what lies ahead. Not really. But here's one area where the returning players do have some experience. The wounds of Survivor. The pain this experience can inflict. And how to survive not just what happens out there on the beach, but how to survive what comes after.
You can't blame yourself. It's just, at the end of the day, it is a show. It's a game. There are things that are out of your control. If you did something and you, like, messed your own game up, then, well, that's your fault. But can't beat yourself up.
Yeah.
It's just, life goes on. You know, you go back to the real world, like, your job's gonna be there, your family's gonna be there. This is just one little piece of your life puzzle.
I think the thing to remember is that, you know, as much as we love Survivor, there's more to life than Survivor. And I think the thing that you get out of Survivor that's worth more than $1 million are the relationships. You know, you just have to remember there's only going to be one winner, and in a way there is no difference between being voted out first and coming in second.
David may be more right than he realizes as the Survivor franchise, fans, and players alike voyage forward into the great unknowns of season 38. What lies ahead at the end of the edge of extinction? Something dark? Something light? The answer resides off in the distance on a future Wednesday night. First One Out presents The People vs. Extinction, a Survivor Season 38 cast preview. It's a podcast written, produced, and hosted by Josh Wigley. That's me. And it's a collaboration between The Hollywood Reporter and Rob Has a Podcast. Taryn Armstrong is our editor. He's also a robot. Music for this season comes from Moon Rock, the electronic duo known in the real world as Paul Koch and Scott Sicariou. Listen to their full debut album, Death of a Spaceman, at thisismoonrock.com. Check out the video version of this podcast on the Rob Has a Podcast YouTube channel. Follow me on social media, at Round Howard, and head to thr.com/survivor for more in the lead-up to the Edge of Extinction, premiering February 20th.